Welcome to the podcast. This episode is brought to you by Maison Beljanski, providing natural supplements for helping your body's healing and wellness, inspired by over 40 years of groundbreaking research. Today, I am joined by my friend and colleague, Dr. Jen Simmons. Jen, what's happening? How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm happy to be here. I apologize for my background. I am in a hotel in Las Vegas where I have been camping out for the last 5 days, but I'm happy to be here with you.
So I know you've been speaking at events there and documentaries and all kinds of stuff. For people who don't know, Dr. Jen is was one of the nation's most prominent breast cancer surgeons. Right, you had a very illustrious career, and you had a big.
I mean, I think I still do.
Well, in a new way, right? I mean,
in a new way, for sure.
Yeah, you. What's really fascinating is that, on one hand, you were, you know, women would come to you with breast cancer. I mean, you were recommending standard of care, right? What you were trained in medical school and surgery, chemotherapy, radiation, and then you went through your own awakening process and health journey. And now you recommend functional medicine, holistic medicine, right?
I do. Natural
approaches, and you help people actually heal naturally from cancer and other chronic diseases. Can you tell a little bit about your personal journey and what led you to shifting? Because that's a huge shift.
Huge.
And it's fascinating how you got there.
Huge. And I think that people don't make that shift unless they have something really impactful. I mean, I got a call to action like no one's business, right? So I really don't remember a time in my life where I didn't know about breast cancer. Breast cancer was part of the tapestry of my family. I come from a very big family, and all of the women in my family had breast cancer, with the exception of my mother, who had colon cancer. And as a young child, I had a first cousin. Her name was Linda Creed. She was a singer-songwriter in the 1970s and 1980s. I am dating myself. She was beautiful, brilliant, larger than life. She wrote 54 hits in all, and her most famous song was The Greatest Love of All. So she wrote that song in 1977 as the title track to the movie The Greatest, starring Muhammad Ali. But it really received its acclaim in March of 1986 when Whitney Houston would release that song to the world. And at that time, it would spend 14 weeks at the top of the charts. Only my cousin Linda would never know, because she died of metastatic breast cancer 1 month after Whitney released that song. I was 16 years old. It feels like yesterday. My hero died. Her life, and ultimately her death, gave birth to my life's purpose, because I never wanted another woman, another family, another community to have to suffer the way that mine suffered. And so I did the only thing I knew how to do. I became a doctor, the first doctor in my family. I became a surgeon. I became the first fellowship-trained breast surgeon in Philadelphia, and I did that really well and for a really long time. And I was the first oncoplastic surgeon. I was the first person to combine surgery with reconstruction in Pennsylvania, and I was running the cancer program for my hospital. And all the time, a wife and a mother and an athlete and a philanthropist and all the things. And I thought I was invincible. And about 15 years into my career, I went from probably being one of the most high-performing people that you've ever met to I couldn't walk across the room because I didn't have the breath in my body. And I underwent an intensive workup. And at the end of that workup, I found myself sitting in the office of my friend and colleague and physician. And he told me that I needed surgery and chemo, radiation, and these things that I said all day, every day to people without hesitation or reservation. And yet, when those words are coming at you, it's a totally different story. And
This was
all
for an autoimmune disease, right?
it was for Graves' disease. But this is how Graves is treated, especially at the point that I was. So I was in thyroid storm and had this gone on longer, I mean, it couldn't have gone on longer. I was so sick. Had this gone on longer, I would have had a heart attack and died. But what I couldn't reconcile in that space and time is that why would God give me an organ only for me to remove it, destroy all evidence of it, and then have to, for the rest of my life, rely on synthetic hormone replacement? It just didn't make sense to me. And all I could think of in that space and time was there's something else, go find it. And I refused treatment. And my doctor said to me the same exact thing that I said to other people all the time. You know, when people would ask me what happens if I don't treat this, I would tell them that they're going to die of their disease. And that's exactly what my friend was telling me. And yet I couldn't reconcile it. So I went home and went to Dr. Google, which admittedly in 2016 was a very different thing. And in 2016, when I asked Dr. Google, how do I heal my thyroid? Dr. Google told me diet, 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 diet. Now, as a conventionally trained physician, all we learned about nutrition, we had 15 hours of instruction in our first year of medical school and never again. And that I am including surgical residency, which was 5 years, fellowship, which was a year. So in my 10 years of training, I had 15 hours that taught me about rickets and scurvy and little else.
Isn't that crazy?
So crazy,
When I tell people that,
crazy.
they very often they're like, how is that even possible? Right? Like, how is that possible that someone can go literally to medical school to learn about treating the body against diseases, right, that we know are primarily diet and lifestyle related? And
Yes.
out of the hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of medical training, you get, what is that, 0.03% or something of the time, 15 hours or less on
Yeah.
nutrition, which is
I
for
mean,
things that are have been cured for, centuries, right? It's like,
yeah.
it's mind-blowing.
And this goes back to the fact that nowhere in medical school are we taught to make people healthy. Nowhere in medical school are we taught about the drivers of health. What we're taught in medical school is to recognize a constellation of symptoms, name it, right? Give it a diagnosis, and then prescribe a drug, a procedure, a something, right? But the purpose of that is not to reverse that condition. The purpose of that is merely to suppress the symptom. That's all it is, suppress the symptom. Our system is literally built, whether it's intentional or not, and we can definitely talk about that. I think this is one of those situations that is both intentional and the people stuck in the system are completely unaware of it.
Right.
So I don't think that doctors go into the system knowing that they're part of that system.
Right.
I think
It's just
doctors
like
all go
it's like
in with the best
politics.
intention. Yes.
It's like politics, right? I mean, there are good people who go into politics with the intention to actually make a difference. And I'm not saying everybody does, but there are many for sure who want to make a positive difference, and then they get into the system and they realize that it is so corrupt, it's so manipulated, it's so driven by power and greed and money, that no matter how good of a difference they want to make, they're constantly railroaded, blocked, and then manipulated to do somebody else's bidding. And if you don't scratch their back, whatever you want to do is not going to get done. And so, it becomes this thing of like, well, what's the lesser of the evil, right? That's our two-party system. I hear it all the time. Well, vote for the lesser of the two evils. Well, I don't want to vote for any evil. So what's the point, right?
I know.
And so the medical system is exactly the same way, unfortunately,
Exactly
today,
the same way.
right?
Exactly the same way. And, going to medical school is a huge, huge, huge investment. And you also give up all of those years of potential earning because, it costs you $500,000 to go to medical school. And then for the first however long when you come out and you're in training, you're making $30,000 a year. So by the time you start off life in your 30s or late 20s, you've lost all of those years of income. You have tremendous debt. Most people have tremendous debt, and you're stuck. You're stuck working in this system. So it takes a lot for someone to walk outside of that because it's scary.
Did you
And for
know any
me,
of this? Did you know any of this at all before your diagnosis? Did you have any inclination of this, or were you kind of,
I
were you
had no idea.
no idea? Okay.
No idea. So, in fact, so this was 2016, and in 2016, when I decided that I needed to learn more about nutrition, because even though I went to medical school, I got zero training around nutrition, and I thought I knew enough because I wasn't overweight, right? So if I wasn't overweight, I must have had it figured out enough, not even realizing that, disordered eating, which is what I had, was enough to keep me thin without, having me do the right thing. And so I enrolled in a certificate program, the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, because it was something that I could do and still work. And I went in really reluctantly, like a total snooty booty doctor who, I drove them crazy. I must have called them 50 times and said, like, "Are you sure I'm going to learn something? I mean, I'm a doctor, for God's sakes." And they assured me that I would learn something and that there were plenty of doctors that had come through the program. And so I'm sitting in one of the very first lectures. This tall, lanky guy walks on stage, big toothy grin, and he introduces himself as a functional medicine physician. And there I am, like, I'm a doctor for 20 years at this point. There's no such thing as a functional medicine physician. What is this quack talking about? Right? And then I remember that I'm sick and I'm there for a reason. So I check my ego at the door, I tune in, and thank God I did. Because as it turns out, the quack was Dr. Mark Hyman. And what he would talk about in the next 2 hours would not only forecast how I was going to heal myself, but he was going to pave the way to how I was going to spend the rest of my career. Because the concept that he introduced me to that day was that, especially in the area of cancer, the tumor is not the problem. The tumor is the symptom of the problem. And unless we start to ask why is this happening? What is happening to drive this dysfunction? Because cancer is a normal response to an abnormal environment. And nowhere in medical school, nowhere in residency, nowhere in fellowship was I ever taught this. Were we ever taught to think about the root cause? We were taught to tell people that cancer was bad luck. Now, I want to be clear that this is never about blame or shame, and no one ever does anything intentionally to get cancer. Even people who smoke cigarettes don't smoke with the intention of getting cancer. People who drink alcohol don't drink with the intention of getting cancer. No one ever does these things on purpose. And yet, we have so much more control over what happens to our body than we think or give ourselves credit for. And it was on that day that I learned my power, and then I learned that I could empower millions of people to restore their health and create the health that they want, rather than just walking through this life kind of aimlessly, just following inside of the guardrails of a system that really does not have our best interest at heart. I mean, at the risk of, sounding like a conspiracy theory, we are very much being guided towards illness our entire lives. I mean, starting off from, when I was a baby, it was considered, breastfeeding was considered something that poor people did. And if you had money or any affluence, you would feed your kid formula, right? So we started off poisoning our kids early and often, right? And then all of the processed food. And, that's really having a moment right now, right? Where Hani is having a moment and Casey Means is having a moment where we're finally waking up to the fact that they're putting stuff in our food and marketing it to our kids that they're not doing for the rest of the world, even the food that they're producing for the rest of the world. Big food is producing bigger garbage for us than they are for the rest of the world. And from the very start, we are being guided towards illness and dysfunction to feed the system, to feed the medical system, to feed the pharmaceutical system. And if you're not aware of it, it just happens to you. And it's unknowingly happening, but it's happening.
I mean, to that point, just break this down for a second, right? All right, you're first born into the world, usually in a hospital. Immediately, they give you vaccines, right? Which are very questionable for our health. Then, after that, you've got more doses over the coming months. You have to go back and get them. You're pushed towards processed formulas and things like that, which is still, as you said, wasn't some, breastfeeding wasn't very popular when you were a baby. There's still a lot of push towards getting kids on early formula and staying away from breast milk. Right, so
Wait,
getting away from nature.
even people who are breastfeeding. My best friend just had a baby in this last year, and she was very, very clear: no vaccines, no antibiotics in the eye, no formula. And the pressure that they gave her, just give him a small bottle because he's hungry. Babies are not hungry for days. So I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the pressure to supplement with formula is so, so, so strong, even in people who are insistent that they're breastfeeding.
Right. And then, if you look at the ingredients in baby formula, a lot of them have maltodextrin and other highly processed ingredients, which is almost always
Corn
made from
syrup.
GMO corn, corn syrup, things that are not nutritious for the baby. So we start as a baby, then they get them on these highly processed cereals and highly processed candies and sugars as early as 2, 3, 4 years old. Then you send them to school, which literally schools are fed prison food. Right, the same trucks that are delivering these highly processed, terrible foods to prisoners, which actually prisoners should be fed healthy food as well. It would change everything. But the same foods they're giving them to the kids at school, highly processed, a lot of animal product, a lot of sugar foods. And then, right, and then you go into even, teenage, adolescent, and then adulthood, and it's the same thing. People are pushed towards fast food restaurants, McDonald's, Burger King. The chicken, whatever's. So by the time people are 20, 20, 25, they're already experiencing so many health issues. And so they go to the doctor, and the doctor says, antibiotics, which we know one round of antibiotics can completely destroy and disrupt the health of your microbiota, which can take upwards of over a year to try and rebalance. From one round of antibiotics, when I was a kid, I had dozens of rounds of antibiotics. It took me years and years and years to, heal from that and help my body to renourish itself. And then you go to the doctor and then they say, oh, well, now we're going to get you on this medication and then that medication, and that medication. It's just this continuous cycle of sickness and putting you on things that make you sick and then giving you things to mask those symptoms and things that make you more sick. It's so anyone that goes, oh, this is a conspiracy theory, it's not a theory when it's proven, right? It's a proven conspiracy. The people who are profiting from this entire system clearly want people to continue to remain sick, and that's a conspiracy. Conspiracy meaning that people are conspiring to keep people sick so that they can keep profiting off of them. Kellogg's, you mentioned Vanny, right, with Kellogg's, for example. Here's my issue with that. So yes, they, don't add food dyes and a couple other ingredients in European cereals that Kellogg's does here in the US and some other companies as well. The problem is, let's say Vanny's successful and Kellogg's goes, hey, yeah, you twisted our thumb. People are mad at us. We're losing profits. We're going to listen to you. We're going to listen to the people. We care about you. We're taking out the food dyes. We're going to use natural colors. And everyone
Yeah,
goes,
it's still
yay, we
garbage.
love Kellogg's. And then the food,
It's still
exactly, is
garbage.
still
Yeah.
garbage. Like,
It's still
don't
garbage.
feed your kids that crap anyway because it's
Yes.
maltodextrin, it's lots of sugar, it's highly processed. There's nothing healthy. So to say it's healthier in Europe than it's here. No, it's the same garbage. It literally is the same
I agree
garbage.
with you 100%, and this has always been my argument. And then I'm answered by all the people saying, well, at least it's better. I could argue that it's not better and that we should skip all of this. And
Right.
quite frankly, if we supported the natural food market in the
Exactly.
way that we supported the processed food market, we wouldn't have these problems.
And it all
If
comes
we
down to money.
subsidized broccoli instead of subsidizing wheat and corn and soy, we wouldn't have this problem.
Right.
Right?
And it's education, right? It's literally voting with your dollar. I mean, the first
Yes.
time I heard that was probably 17 plus years ago, and it hit me so hard. I thought, you know what? That's the one thing that I can vote for every day that actually will make a difference is where I spend my money is exactly what I tell the markets, what I tell the companies and the governments of what I want. And if I spend my money on the things that are actually going to provide health to me and my children and my family, guess what? More companies are going to respond, more lobbyists are going to respond, more governments are going to respond. And so it is the
Yes.
one place we absolutely have so much power is where we spend our dollar. And people go, oh, well, healthy food's too expensive, so I buy fast food. You can eat healthy for the same amount of money that you can eat garbage if you know what you're doing.
Yes, I agree with you completely. And yet, it's hard to be that house and that person in that. My children are like, Mom, there's nothing to eat in this house. Right? And they're actually, at this
And
point,
it's full of food, right? You got
it's full of food.
vegetables and fruits
Yes.
and all kinds of
At
things,
this
but
point, they're 16 and 18, and
yeah.
they love the food in our house. But when they were younger, and they would go to everyone else's house, and there's junk food and snacks and the things that I just don't keep in my house. And I would say, they would like, there's no snacks. Okay, have some pistachios, have some walnuts, have some cashews, have seaweed snacks. Like, there are snacks. It's just not cheese puffs.
Right,
You
right.
know, it's not
It's not the
Doritos.
addictive stuff.
Yes,
It's not the high
yes.
sugar that's going to give you a
But
dopamine hit and make you
yeah.
addicted to it. Yeah.
But now, I have a football player, I have a weightlifter, like these kids don't want any of that garbage because they're not putting it in their bodies.
Nice.
You know, now they know that if they want their bodies to perform, they have to give it performance things.
Right.
So, but it was hard being that household growing up for them.
Yeah, my kid, I
But
mean, I get it. My daughter does great. My son's a little more challenging. He's 9 years
yeah.
old, and mostly because he just wants to defy everything that we tell him at this stage, right? But I want to go back a little bit. So when you were diagnosed with Graves' disease, and then you said, I'm going to learn functional medicine, diet, lifestyle, do what I can to heal this naturally. What were the core things that you learned that you implemented in your own life that then you saw yourself get better?
Yeah. So for me, first of all, I immediately enrolled in the Institute for Functional Medicine, and I spent the next 3 years really submerged in the study of functional medicine. And for me, I was very, very eating disordered. I used to think that birthday cake was a food group. So I would very much binge on sweets and then not eat for 2 or 3 days in order to kind of make up for that. I was burning my candle at both ends. I was working, working, working. I had very little balance in my life. I had no mindset practices. I had no self-care at all. So I had a lot of work to do. I was also living in mold and didn't know it. So that was probably the biggest trigger for me, is that I was holding it together before then, and then we moved, and the mold added into my already disordered existence was enough to flip the switch for me.
Yeah, your immune system just couldn't take anymore, right? It was like,
Couldn't
all
take it
right.
anymore.
Yep.
Yeah. So that was the major thing for me. So we did a mold renovation, and I started to, run air filters, but also meditation and grounding and fasting, but fasting in a healthy way. And when I broke that fast, I broke it with real food and healthy food. And I also was not supplementing, which was a huge problem as someone who is plant-based, because it's very, very difficult to get enough B12 unless you're supplementing, if you're entirely plant-based. I don't like to use vegan because, as people often remind me, Twizzlers are vegan. So I was whole food plant-based.
Now, you started that in 2016, 2017, or you were
So
before?
when I was 11 years old and at summer camp, my grandmother brought an article for me to read. It was by none other than Dean Ornish. And I had no idea who he was at the time or what that meant, but she brought me this article saying that, and she told me it's too late for me, because she was, 70 years old at the time, but it's not too late for you. So you can stop eating meat, and you can be healthy. And so I just stopped. And there were, times along the way where I went back, but that for the most part, me inherently in my soul, I'm plant-based.
You know, with the cold and flu season here, it's critically important that we enhance and strengthen our immune systems. Yes, would you agree? The problem is, though, that there's so much confusion out there when it comes to what actually works for our bodies and for our health. Well, I'll tell you what I used. I used Maison Beljanski's wellness products. Maison Beljanski's products are backed by science to not only help empower the immune system, but can support detoxification and contribute to our overall health. Coming from Europe, the all-natural Beljanski formulas are now available in the United States and are recommended by top doctors everywhere. A lot of the colleagues I work with, functional medicine practitioners that work with patients with all kinds of diseases, are recommending Maison Beljanski's products to their very own patients. As a special sponsor of this podcast, Maison Beljanski has included a very special discount offer for all of my listeners. You can get 15% off your first order using the promo code Nathan, and you'll always enjoy free shipping when you order 4 products or more. You can grab your wellness products today at MaisonBeljanski.com. That's MaisonBeljanski, MaisonBeljanski.com, and use code Nathan for 15% off. Hey, welcome back to the podcast. Before we get started, I want to give you a free gift that I have spent over a decade researching thousands of hours of peer-reviewed studies and interviewing hundreds of world-leading functional medical doctors and cancer conquerors that lays out a blueprint for helping your mind and body become a cancer-fighting fortress for natural cancer prevention and healing. And that's my Amazon number one best-selling book, Becoming Cancer-Free. The physical copy sells for like 10 bucks on Amazon, which, you know, you can go get that if you want, but I'm happy to give you the ebook absolutely free. Just head over to becomingcancerfree.com and you can download that ebook instantly. Again, that's becomingcancerfree.com, and it's yours as a gift from me to you for tuning into this podcast. All right, let's get to the show. You know what's funny? I never heard that story about Dean Ornish until now. And
really?
What was it? A couple of years ago? And remember? Like, imagine how God works, right? So you get that Article 11, puts you on a plant-based diet. And then a couple of years ago, I invited you onto a webcast with Dean and I, right? And you were there on the webcast as one of my expert panelists with Dean Ornish. And who else did we have? We had... I think we had Dr. Michael. It was a stellar panel, and here, and that was the first time you'd met him in person, right? Well, on Zoom.
It was. Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine that. Isn't that amazing?
I was so starstruck. It's
so
like
cool.
Having problems getting my words out. Yeah. So isn't that amazing how like the world just comes full circle like that? Yeah. So my grandmother, when I was 11 years old, handed me this article.
That's
and
amazing.
it had that tremendous impact on the rest of my life. But I think that things like that find you. I mean, that's where I was meant to be. But I was also meant to be smarter about supplementing. My vitamin D level was like 13 or something crazy like that, because I was never outside. I wasn't eating any animals, and I was not supplementing. So for me and my healing, it was just the perfect storm of, Jennifer, you can do this, but you need to do it differently, far differently.
The other thing about a plant-based diet that, you know, may have contributed towards your thyroid issues, right, is a lack of iodine. So if you're not eating seaweed and nori and other sea vegetables, or supplementing with iodine, or have salt that has iodine in it, right? Like, actually, it's not just plant-based either. So many people actually, even on omnivore diet, end up deficient in iodine. It's lacking in a lot of people's diets nowadays. And if you don't get enough adequate iodine, your thyroid health can tank over the years. So you have iodine.
And it's actually,
B12,
a little more... Yeah,
and
it's a little more complicated
D.
than
These
that,
are some
though.
Big ones. No,
yeah.
I know it's not the only thing, but just for the general population, right? Like, these are some basic things that we should be testing once a year at least, right?
Absolutely.
Iodine, B12, on any diet, you know, vitamin D, your omegas, you know, omega-3s, for example. Like, these are some key things that so many people are deficient in on every diet. I saw a study recently. It was something like, close to 60% of people tested on all diets were vitamin D deficient. And that's, you know, that's massive. Vitamin D is so essential because people aren't getting enough sunshine. Like you said, they're indoors all day long. So essential for, you know, our immune function health.
And I think another part that few people realize, that I'm actually excited about this administration, because I pray that this is one of the major things that they take care of. But fluoride in water, fluoride in toothpaste, fluoride has more affinity than iodine will in thyroid hormones. So it will replace that iodine molecule. And so for people who are having symptoms of hypothyroidism, and you check their thyroid levels and their thyroid levels are normal, they can have normal thyroid levels. But if a fluoride ion is sitting there instead of an iodine ion, they're not going to have functional thyroid hormone. So many people have fluoride in their diets, have bromide in their diets, that this is causing them to have dysfunctional thyroid hormone. And I, up until that point, thought fluoride was a good thing.
Right.
Fluoride was essential. I mean, that's what we were taught. There's still most of the practicing dentists out there think that fluoride is essential and helpful. I mean, I get the stink eye every time my kids go to the dentist because they're like, can we give them a fluoride treatment? I'm like, hell no. You may not give them a fluoride treatment. Thank you very much. So,
And and just to clarify, I know you're on the same page as this. You know, tiny amounts of fluoride in certain foods and things in nature that end up in our diet, that's very natural, that's very normal, that's healthy, right? But drinking fluoride in our water every single day is like, you know, putting mercury in your mouth, in your dental amalgams that are off-gassing every single day, and thinking that mercury, which is a neurotoxin, carcinogen, cancer-causing element. Yeah, it's natural in nature, but it doesn't mean we should have it in our mouth, off-gassing in our mouth every single day. It's also true with fluoride.
And brushing your teeth with it every single day
Right.
is a huge problem.
This is why
A
I
huge
started
problem.
filtering. We switched to fluoride-free toothpaste and started filtering our water probably 17 years ago, I would guess, and have always. Those are two simple things. You can get fluoride out. You don't have to wait for RFK to do it, which would be great because he'll help millions of people. But just filter your water and use, you know, a healthy fluoride-free toothpaste.
Absolutely.
Revitin. Revitin from our good friend Dr. Jerry Curatola. That's a great option.
Love it. Love Revitin. It's an amazing option. And even if you're not prepared to put a filtration system on your water, you can get a Berkey filter for your countertop and just filter your water, filter what you drink and what you cook with so that you are not ingesting excess fluoride.
Exactly.
And, you know, these are things that I did not know. So it took me a long time to heal because I was learning all the way and implementing what I was learning, but you know, I didn't get that all at once. And it took a lot of experimentation. And I should have gotten help and I didn't because I didn't know what I didn't know. And I also learned along the way that there were so many things that contributed to my complete crashing that I didn't even know about. I mean, you brought up antibiotics. So I had strep throat, I don't know, 100 times as a kid. They finally took my tonsils out when I was 17. So the number of antibiotics that I had as a child, I mean, I can't even begin to measure. And you brought up the fact that antibiotics have a profound effect on your microbiome and it takes a long time to restore that. Every dose of antibiotics that you take increases your risk of cancer. Every dose, right? So we as a society, I mean, this is known, right? Like I'm not speaking any revelations here. And yet, for years in my practice, antibiotics were just given out. Like if anyone had a sniffle, if anyone had an anything, oh, just go on a Z-Pak. Right? They were just liberally used in the 90s, in the early 2000s. And something about prophylactic antibiotics never sat well with me. Like I never understood giving mostly what bothered me in my surgical practice about using prophylactic antibiotics was, you know, there's a certain percentage of people that are going to have an anaphylactic, like a life-threatening reaction to antibiotics. So for me, my infection rate was way lower than that anaphylactic rate. So I stopped using prophylactic antibiotics in my practice from the start. As soon as I came out of fellowship, when I started my own practice, I just didn't use them because I didn't believe in putting extra things in people. So, you know, I think there was something always a little intuitive about me, Not much. I'm not giving myself too much credit. Not much, but there was always something a little intuitive about me. So, yes, plant-based for many, many, many years. And then when my body crashed, I was able to see that as opportunity. And I think that that is the biggest gift in it all, because most people, when they get a diagnosis, they see it as a punishment. And I understand that. I mean, it's really easy to feel badly about it. It's really easy to feel terrified and nothing else. But if you can back up from that and just gain a little perspective, and this is mostly the reason why I wrote my book, The Smart Woman's Guide to Breast Cancer, which I have a copy right here. If you can, with rare exception, breast cancer is not an emergency. It feels like an emergency. It feels like an emotional emergency. But with rare exception, and I can talk about those exceptions, if you have inflammatory breast cancer, that is a very rare form of breast cancer where you go from having a normal breast to a breast that's filled with tumor in about a month. And you have redness, and it basically looks completely inflamed. So inflammatory breast cancer is an emergency. It needs to be treated right away. If you have breast cancer that has spread to your bone, metastatic breast cancer, and caused a fracture, it is virtually impossible to heal when you're in pain. So that needs to be dealt with and treated right away. And if you have metastatic disease to the brain, so you have breast cancer that spread to the brain is a fixed, it's taking up a fixed space in the skull, right? The skull is a fixed area. So you can't afford for too much swelling because it will cut off the blood supply to the brain, and that's not consistent with life. So, if you have metastasis to the brain, that's an emergency and needs to be treated right away. Everyone else, you have time. You have the time to learn about the disease, to understand what's happening to you, to think about your why, and to make a plan and a determination as to what you're going to do to reverse this. And you can build a team of people that think like you think, that respect you, respect your opinion, respect your thoughts about this. And if you can see it, because I understand that cancer is not a blessing, never a blessing, but if you can see it as a blessed opportunity to take stock in your life, to see what's working and what's not, and create health, actually create health, it's an amazing, amazing opportunity. And that's what I got out of my diagnosis. Now, I want to be clear that I got a lot worse before I got better. And healing is never this. It's this, and it's this, and it's this, and it's this, and it's this. And it's never done. It's never done. I'm on a constant, constant quest towards health. It's a journey for sure. And I'm always looking to get better, to do better. And I'm looking for that for my patients too. And I'm sure you feel the same way, that it's for everyone. It's a journey.
It's a life, it has to become a lifestyle at some point, right?
Yes.
Where you just,
Yes.
where everything you do is like, okay, this is now just part of my life. And I look forward to all the things, continue to learn about health and implement and experiment with. It's like something that a lot of people look at as a chore, expensive, invest, not even investment. It's more like, as a burden versus the more you do these things and live this way and eat healthy and juice and do cleanses and fasting and sauna and exercise, it's like the more you do, the more you want to do because the better you feel, right? I
Yes.
feel better. Oh, I'm going to do more. Oh, now I'm feeling better with this, so I'm going to try this. Oh, what about pulse electromagnetic frequency therapy? Okay, let me try that. Oh, this is starting to feel good. What about red light therapy? What about this, that? And it just becomes a lifestyle that you look forward to doing. I
Yeah.
want to talk to you about or ask you about a couple things specifically for cancer. Now, still today, as long as I've been teaching about it and many others have been teaching about it, still so many people are misled to believe certain things are bad for them in regards to cancer or hormone health, when in fact they are actually incredibly healthy for them, right? Because of misinformation. One of those things is things like organic tofu or soy, that people think, oh, soy tanks your hormones, can lead to cancer, it has estrogen, right? All this misinformation. And I would love to hear what you write about in your book on soy. We've talked about it in the past.
Yeah.
In terms of whether it's just health in general, cancer prevention, or somebody dealing with a cancer diagnosis.
So soy does have estrogen. Soy has what we call phytoestrogens or plant-based estrogens. And these plant-based estrogens tend to activate certain receptors in our body. And in the breast specifically, these phytoestrogens activate the estrogen receptor beta. So we have a cyclic plan in our bodies. And as women, we, in a quest for reproduction and potentially feeding a child, we have a cycle every month. And in the beginning of the cycle, we are building. And towards the end of the cycle, if there's not conception, then everything is kind of going away and being quieted. So the building part of the cycle is the alpha receptors, and the going away and quiet is the beta receptors. And as it turns out, soy activates these beta receptors. So not only do they not put us at risk of breast cancer, they're actually protective against breast cancer. And we know when we look at the population of people that consume the most soy, they actually have the least amount of breast cancers around the world.
And all cancers, even all hormone-related
Yes.
cancers, even men and
Yes.
prostate cancer, we see that
Men
as
and
well.
prostate cancer, colon cancer, all of these cancers that are hormone related, right? Now, there is a big blue ocean of soy products. So, when I encourage people to eat soy products, I am talking about organic soy products. I'm talking about non-GMO, non-genetically modified soy products. I'm talking about the soy products that our bodies are recognizing that haven't been manipulated by man, right? The things that occur naturally. And also, they should be minimally processed. So, we're talking about edamame or soy milk or tofu, which is made from soy milk, or miso, which is fermented soy, or natto, which is fermented soy. But, or did I already said tofu, right? My brain's like,
Tofu, yeah, tofu. The
yeah.
other good one is tempeh, which is kind of a
Tempeh.
fermented
Yeah.
as well. Yep.
Yes. So, these unprocessed or minimally processed forms that are organic, that are non-GMO, these are very protective against breast cancer and like diseases. And you should not fear soy. There's absolutely no reason to fear soy. The fear of soy comes from a complete misunderstanding about nutrition and the relationship of estrogen to breast cancer. Because most doctors, unfortunately, believe that estrogen causes breast cancer, which is a ridiculous, ridiculous notion. So if you believe that estrogen causes breast cancer, you have to believe that every woman was put on this earth with the purpose of developing breast cancer, right? It's absurd. It's ridiculous. And the reason that doctors believe that is because of the pharmaceutical industry and the drugs that they've developed to block estrogen. And so they created this very, very kind of elementary explanation, and everyone bought it. And now it's because it's so simple and seemingly logical, it's accepted. It just happens to be wrong. And there are so many things that fall under this category. But I just think it's so interesting that when you look at the population of women that are on hormone replacement, right, that are using bioidentical estrogen, that is actually protective against breast cancer, right? And when you look at the women who are on hormone replacement and compare them to the women that aren't on hormone replacement, both groups get breast cancer, right? Because it has nothing to do with the hormone replacement. It has to do with everything else. So people on hormone replacement get breast cancer. People not on hormone replacement get breast cancer. But when you look at the two groups, the women who are on hormone replacement and get breast cancer actually have better outcomes. And then when you flip it on the other side and you look at the women who have had breast cancer, the ones that go on hormone replacement afterwards do not have an increased risk of recurrence and they have better long-term outcomes. They have less all-cause mortality. So this whole convenient explanation that hormones cause breast cancer, that estrogen causes breast cancer, is something that so desperately needs to be unlearned. And yet it's hanging in there, like the mammogram controversy. It's just hanging in there because people learned it and they believed that what they were taught in training was true and they never questioned it. And the Women's Health Initiative didn't help, right? That whole study that came out originally and said that hormone replacement causes breast cancer and there's increased incidence. And it was later retracted and debunked in 2017 in a paper that I'm sure no one read. And so, we're still suffering generations later under that complete false assumption that hormones cause breast cancer, but they don't. And phytoestrogens, not just the ones in soy, but the ones in flax, all these phytoestrogens, these are all protective against breast cancer and should be included in everyone's breast cancer protocol.
I love that. The other thing about phytoestrogens, also some of those are known as isoflavonoids or isoflavones, right? Have anti-cancer properties. That's the
In
thing
it,
about them that protects against cancer that's really fascinating. The other thing about phytoestrogen, which is again plant means plant estrogen, if you compare it to a human estrogen molecule in the body, a phytoestrogen in a plant has about 1/1000th of the effect of a normal estrogen molecule. So you'll see doctors, these carnivore doctors and people online talking about how plants are bad for you and soy has so much estrogen and 100 times more estrogen than meat and this and that. And unfortunately, they have no idea what they're talking about because one, they don't understand the effect, the protective properties that we're talking about. But number two, they also don't even know because they haven't done the research that phytoestrogens are 1/1000th of the effect
They're very
of human estrogen. It's
weak
totally different.
estrogens.
Yeah. So, if you're concerned about, excess hormones from your diet, most of that actually is coming from an animal-based diet, from milk and dairy and animal products. Whereas the phytoestrogens in plants like soy have been shown again and again and again and again, literally in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of studies, to be very protective and not to tank or throw your hormones out of balance, but to help balance your hormones because they can. What's really fascinating too is that they can do what our body needs. They have an anti-estrogenic effect, right? and they have a pro-estrogenic effect, really depending on how they attach to our receptors, like the beta receptor we were just talking about, and so forth. And so that's the cool thing about plants and our human design, from God, is like we put the plants into our body and then our body knows what to do with it. But when we're putting all these chemicals and toxins and excess animal products and processed food, and we're stressed out and lots of heavy metals, that's when things get out of whack. And then people go, oh, it's the soy's the problem, right? Or the green vegetables are the problem. Oh my God, but I'm over here eating Doritos and Cheetos and filled with heavy metals and drinking fluoride every day and stressed out and sleeping 5 hours a night and drinking 7 cups of caffeine every day. But it's the vegetables that are going to kill me, right? It's just like it's total nonsense,
I
but
know. I know.
it's what gets clicks and views, and
I know.
unfortunately, good people are falling for that misinformation, and it's actually kind of sad because then they suffer from it.
Well, it feels really persuasive when that stuff comes out. And I think so many people don't realize that, you would never take growth hormone, but if you're eating commercially raised anything, you're taking growth hormone.
Right.
And if you think that you wouldn't take unnecessary antibiotics, but you're eating commercially raised animals, you're consuming a lot of antibiotics. And I just saw something over the weekend about if you wouldn't take vaccines, but you're eating farm-raised fish, they're all vaccinated. So if you wouldn't do these things, you have to know that they're all being done to the animals that you're consuming. And it's not just about not eating those processed meats. I mean, I think that everyone has a firm understanding now that bacon and sausage and deli meats, they all are very bad for your health. But I think that there's a also similarly pervasive understanding that meat and chicken and fish are all healthy. And they're really not. Most of them are highly, highly inflammatory and contain things that you would never voluntarily put in your body.
Right. And it on the other end of that spectrum, right, if you listen to any of these, medical doctor health influencers on Instagram and so forth now that have millions and millions and millions of followers, they're telling everybody, no, eat more butter, eat more bacon, eat more tallow, eat more beef, eat more meat, right? And to their credit, they're saying, hey, cut out the processed food and just eat, grass-fed, grass-finished beef and things like that, right? They're going for a more natural approach, which is great on any, we could agree on that, on any diet
Yeah,
philosophy is
we
the
can
more
all
natural it
agree
is.
that no one should be eating processed food,
Right.
right?
No
We can
processed
all agree on
food,
that.
no processed sugar, right? Whatever you're doing as close to nature as possible. But the problem is, and now you can see people who've been following these diets for because this is so new that there's no long-lasting civilization in the world that has lived on a 100% animal-based diet and lived for 70, 80, 90, 100 years. It doesn't matter what people tell you, it doesn't exist because even the hunter-gatherers lived on a 70% plus plant-based diet. Even the longest civilizations around the world that have animal products in their diet, like Blue Zones, for example, many of them only ate animal products once or twice a week, not three times a day like people are doing now. And
I
now
know.
you'll see people posting, I followed the carnivore diet exactly. I ate the cleanest meat and beef tallow, tallow and butter and all this stuff. And now I've got all
I
these
could just
digestive issues. I've got
vomit from you
inflammatory,
saying that.
right? Isn't that crazy? I've got all, and you can see people posting now. I did it because I thought this was good for me. And now they, in 1 year, 2 years later, they have all these unbelievable health issues. And people go, oh yeah, they do that. They get that on the vegan diet too. Yeah, they get it on a junk food vegan diet, right? But when you're on a real whole food, organic, plant-based vegan diet and plant-based diet, and you know what you're doing, you're getting the right nutrients. You supplement with a couple of things and you supplement with, you get the rest from your real food. People don't have those issues. We see them reverse those issues all the time. But now people are sharing and posting like all the time how this, carnivore diet is literally destroying and tanking their health. And so You have to be really careful who you listen to and what you're willing to put your body through. And
I
if you're going to
know.
experiment with things like that, make sure when things are going south, when you're already 6, 8, 10, 12 months into it, and it's getting worse and worse and worse and worse, 18 months into it, things are going bad, right? Don't be so attached to that thing that you're not willing to let it go and do something better.
Yeah. And I think in general for women, carnivore diets are not good. They're just not good. I know that everyone, when they start off, they feel better, but I think that that is due to the fact that they're cutting out junk food, they're cutting out processed food. So maybe in the beginning they feel better, but in the long term, it's a very inflammatory diet.
Right.
It's a highly inflammatory diet, and we are not meant to eat a low fiber diet, and especially in this day and age, because we are living in a very, very unique environment that we have not known ever, right? We are not living on our grandmother's earth. We're not even living on our mother's earth. And the earth that we live on now is exponentially more toxic. And we need way more fiber in our diet than we ever did before to help with detoxification. You definitely need those other practices. You need to sweat. You need to not be constipated. And moving your bowels 2, 3 times a day. Like, we should all be like children and dogs. Every time you eat, you should be pooping. And we need to be getting rid of those toxins. So drinking filtered water, making sure that you're moving and then sweating. And a high fiber diet is one of the ways that we can help ourselves detoxify. And if you're not getting that and you're not doing that, you're not going to survive in this environment. It's e even when you think you're not doing it, like, for instance, here I am in Vegas for a conference and I'm filming and I'm living in this totally, totally, totally toxic environment. I'm not putting perfume on, but I'm surrounded by it. I'm not smoking, but I'm surrounded by it. I don't intend to suck up car exhaust, but the only way that I can get my steps in is if I go outside and walk on the strip, right? So these are the choices, and we are being inundated by toxins all the time. And whether you are doing it intentionally or it's just coming to you unintentionally, we have to give our bodies what they need to be able to get rid of this, to be able to detoxify it for us. And a high fiber diet is one of the tools that we desperately need.
What are some of
Desperately
those,
need.
what are some of your top favorite foods to add to a, high fiber diet or just a
Yeah.
healthy diet in general? What are your
Yeah.
top, I don't know, 5 to 10 foods people should be aiming for, throughout the week?
Absolutely. So every single day, I think people need to be eating leafy greens, eating the cruciferous, which is very rich in sulforaphane and DIM and indole-3-carbinol, things that help us to detoxify our hormones. So leafy greens, the cruciferous, stuff from the onion family, stuff from the garlic family, and mushrooms. I'm very, very big into mushrooms, especially medicinal mushrooms. And the medicinal mushrooms are broken up into the culinary and non-culinary, and I think you should be doing both every single day. Mushrooms are the detoxifiers of nature. I think it's so interesting. Do you remember the Exxon Valdez spill?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Do you know how that was remediated?
It was with fungi, wasn't it?
They put spores in the
Yeah.
ocean.
Yeah, it was
They
spores,
put,
fungal spores, yeah.
yeah, I can't remember if it was either oyster mushroom spores or shiitake mushroom spores, but one of the two. And that's how they cleaned up the ocean. Because what mushrooms do is they take this decaying matter in nature and they transform it into that beautiful fruiting body. And everything that it does in nature, it does in your body. So it completely helps our damaged and dying tissues. And it supports immunity. It's antibacterial, antiviral, antifungal, helps to detoxify what we're breathing in, what's coming in through our skin, what's coming into our gut. So I love, love, love mushrooms. And
Yeah, I just
then
want to double check this, 'cause I now again, if you want to find the truth about something, you have to dig deeper than the first page of Google. But they're saying no, the Exxon Valdez spill was not cleaned up with fungal spores, but microorganisms. But microorganisms, including fungi, did play a role in reducing the environmental impact of the spill. Microorganisms such as fungi, bacteria, and yeast are able to consume petroleum hydrocarbons, which are essential for their growth. These microbes are already present in the water, but proliferate quickly during a spill. Other methods used to clean up the Exxon Valdez spill included burning, mechanical cleanup, chemical dispersants, skimming oil. So it's weird because
okay.
I had heard that too at some long, some point ago, so a long time ago. So when you mentioned it, I was like, oh yeah, but maybe this was it, was that, they helped, fungal spores, bacteria helped, microorganisms helped, but they didn't, company didn't technically use them, I guess.
Okay. There you
Apparently.
go. I stand corrected.
Well, I want to, always fact check and double check these things for ourselves, because you never know. So
Yeah.
that's interesting. But the thing about, to your point, though, I mean, mushrooms, Dr. Furman was on my podcast a while ago, and he told me that if you're taking he said mushrooms are as powerful, medicinal mushrooms are as powerful as tamoxifen. Because everybody's always asking in our cancer coaching program, right? Like, what are alternatives to tamoxifen? He says mushrooms actually are as powerful
Specifically,
as
turkey tail.
turkey
Turkey tail is
tail.
very, very well known and widely used around the world as part of cancer treatment protocols.
There was another study I saw years ago when I was researching for my book, Becoming Cancer Free, was about they were looking at people who ate. It was 18 grams of mushrooms a day. And 18 grams is literally like two small mushrooms that could fit in the palm of your hand. That's not that
Yeah,
much.
it's nothing.
18 grams of mushrooms a day. And people who ate, so at least like two mushrooms a day versus those who didn't, had, I have to pull up the study, but it was something like 65% less chance of a cancer diagnosis than people who ate no mushrooms. Like, mushrooms
Telling
are
you,
incredible, edible
incredible.
mushrooms, medicinal. And the highest performing ones are things like maitake, shiitake, right? They have certain chemical constituents that have higher anti-cancer properties. But any mushrooms, I mean, whether it's cremini's or it's button mushrooms or
Yeah.
it's portobello that you can get at
They
the
all
store.
have, yeah, they
Yeah.
all have really, they all have aromatase inhibition. So they all prevent excess production of estrogen, which
Right.
for some people, even though their systemic levels of estrogen aren't elevated, a tumor, in order to kind of propagate its growth, can influence the tissues around it to produce more estrogen to help it with growth. And so with which should not be confused with causation. This is a survival mechanism. Again, cancer is a normal response to an abnormal environment. And when the breast cells feel threatened because their environment has shifted, they undergo a transformation and they go into survival mode.
Right.
And
Well,
so, really, the key to cancer reversal is to shift that environment from that chemistry of stress to the chemistry of joy.
that's like saying sugar causes cancer, so stop eating berries and fruit, right? And
Right.
that's the illogical. Well, it's
Yes.
logical, but it's not accurate, because
It's not
sugar,
accurate.
glucose, fructose that's inside fruit and berries is not the issue that's causing cancer. Right.
No.
Yes, cancer can get a large percentage of its fuel source from glucose. That does not, it can also get it from other sources, glutamate, for example. It doesn't mean that fruit and berries in their whole form is causing cancer. We should avoid them. And in fact, studies show that the more berries you add into your diet and certain fruits, actually cancer risk goes down because it has all the other anti-cancer properties in there, the fiber, the water, the minerals, the vitamins, the
The
phytonutrients.
anthocyanins,
Exactly. So processed sugar, sure, absolutely. We should avoid that at all costs if you have a cancer diagnosis. But then to make that conclusion that, oh, fruit is also bad, that's what most people do. So, I mean, I gave a talk this last weekend at a retreat, and there's a woman in the audience that said, oh, no, fruit's bad. I heard that fruit's bad. It's got too much sugar, so stop eating fruit. And I'm like, you need to be eating 5 to 7 pieces of fruit. Let's just say 5 pieces of fruit every single day if you want to be healthy. Like, if we're talking about avoiding a cancer diagnosis and helping your body heal and thrive, we should be aiming for 5 pieces of fruit, not avoiding it at all costs.
But I do want to add in that you want to eat the fruits that are rich in color
Exactly.
because those are the ones that are going to be the most beneficial for you. So go for color. But putting berries in your diet every day is highly, highly, highly beneficial. And that sugar that's in them is not really available because it's bound to the fiber of the fruit. So it doesn't, they tend to, although I think everyone should check for themselves, they tend to not elevate your blood sugar and because they are bound to fiber. Now, at the same time, while I love whole fruit, I don't love juicing fruit because that is immediately available as sugar. Yes, you will still get the vitamins, but I believe that it should come along with the fiber.
Agreed. And to your point on, spiking blood glucose or spiking insulin, for example, like people eat fruit and let's say they have type 2 diabetes and they go, yeah, I get a spike immediately. Well, of course you do, because it's clear in the literature. And my good friend Cyrus Kambada, PhD, and co-founder of Mastering Diabetes, they've proven again and again and again that that happens because you have too much dietary fat in your diet. When you're diet is full of excess fat, including saturated fat. What it does is it blocks your cell's ability to take in the insulin. And so when that happens, your body keeps having to work against that. And so when the glucose comes in, when you're insulin resistant, right, which is prediabetes, type 2 diabetes, 1.5, et cetera, then your body can't process that glucose properly, even when it's a so fruit juice is one thing. Even the glucose attached to the food, because you have too much dietary fat, you're still going to have those problems. And so what they do, and they see it with thousands of people, they reduce the fat significantly, even healthy fat, but maybe 15% of your diet. They increase the healthy carbohydrates, right? Grains and beans and fruits and berries and all these things, squash, sweet potato, all of that. And then all of a sudden, they see that, oh, you become insulin sensitive, and very often type 2 diabetes goes away, and you can have all the fruit and everything that you absolutely want. And so it's really fascinating when you learn these biological mechanisms. It's like, oh, I have too much saturated fat, or too much animal fat, or too much dietary fat in my diet. Let me reduce that and increase the healthy carbohydrates, which is what our brain and body thrives on anyway, right? It's like that's what our body needs, is that glucose and fructose, and that's where, our main fuel source comes from.
I also think the order in which you eat matters. So I tell people to always eat your low glycemic foods first. And then I generally recommend fruit at the end of the meal. But if you're having a smoothie that has all your vegetables in it and your plant-powered protein powder in it. And I do advocate for like avocado as a healthy fat in your smoothie. But I also put in frozen cauliflower and spinach, and that's really the base. I'm giving you my daily smoothie right now. And then berries. That's where but I also think that there is still individuality And what works for me maybe doesn't work for you, and what works for you doesn't work for me. But we do have some guidelines, we do have some guardrails. So another of the foods that I think are indispensable in the cancer space is ground flax. I have everyone on 2 tablespoons of ground flax every day. And you can either put it as a salad topper, you can put it in your soup, you can put it in your smoothie, but this is very rich in phytoestrogens. It's also an amazing, amazing source of fiber. And I love it, and it's a must. Another superfood for me is Brazil nuts. And I tell people to have 2 every day as their source of selenium. And I love energy bits, which is spirulina and chlorella. I don't know if you're using these, but this is
I
an
put a powder
amazing.
in my, I use a powder in my smoothie, but it's just, it's a green powder with spirulina chlorella, but I don't know about the
Yeah.
energy bits. Is that a
So
product that's like a brand or what?
that's a product. It's a brand. It is the founder of this company is an amazing, amazing, amazing woman named Catherine, and they're actually producing this spirulina and chlorella in, filtered water tanks with like just the right amount of light, and they are air drying it so it never gets exposed to heat. So none of the proteins or none of the enzymes are ever denatured. And their components have amazing anti-cancer properties, and they are protective with your mitochondria, and they help with mitochondrial repair. Those are the energy producing units of the cells. And cancer is actually a result of mitochondrial dysfunction. So this is something that I advise everyone to use in their daily routine, and to include spirulina and chlorella. I think that they're absolutely positively superfoods. Turmeric is another one of my superfoods, and you can use the actual root. You can use the powder in your cooking. You can supplement with it in capsules. But turmeric is another amazing anti-inflammatory, has anti-cancer properties. I think that once you, it seems daunting if you're not doing all of this stuff right now. But once you get into the habit of this, these are things that are so easily incorporated into your everyday, and they just up level everything for you. And before I was sick, I actually didn't know what it was to be healthy. I didn't know what it felt like. I didn't know what it felt like to get out of bed in the morning with energy for miles. I thought it was normal to be tired. I thought it was normal to be aching, right? And what happens when you go to the doctor and you tell the doctor that you're tired and achy? What does the doctor say? That's normal. You're getting older. This is what happens.
Here's some drugs that'll
Yeah.
help.
Yeah. Take some ibuprofen, get yourself going.
Here's some NSAIDs, and
Yeah.
we'll block the pain, we'll block the inflammation, but we're going to destroy your gut in the meantime, which will lead to depression and potentially cancer and autoimmune disease. But let's just block the pain. You'll be okay.
But this is what's happening in every single aspect of medicine. If you go in and you have reflux, what happens? Do you get told to change your diet? No. You get put on either proton pump inhibitors or antacids, right? If you go in because your joints are achy and you have pain, what happens? You get prescribed NSAIDs and get told to take them every day. If you can't sleep at night and you're waking up every night at between 1 and 3 in the morning, which we know is a detoxification issue, what happens? You get prescribed a sleeping medication. And nowhere does anyone ever talk to you about why that is happening. And I could go on and on and on, right? We're putting people on all kinds of, osteoporosis support, right? These medicines that people are being prescribed, these are toxic medications that are never, ever, ever solving the problem. They're putting a band-aid on it. Sometimes they're making it worse in the long run. And many of these medications, the side effects require another medication. And before you know it, people are on five, six, seven pharmaceuticals, all for what could have been corrected with diet.
Right. Diet,
And
lifestyle,
80% of
stress
our,
reduction. Yep.
yeah, 80% of our chronic disease is from dietary and lifestyle. And doctors have no idea how to create health. All they know how to do is diagnose and prescribe. So that's what they do. I think they do it with good intention, especially in the beginning. And then I think they get stuck
Right.
and they don't even know that there's one alternative. And I didn't know that there was an alternative.
Well, I'm
And
glad that
it,
you broke out of that cage and, thank God for the autoimmune disease that you were diagnosed with because it helped you discover everything you've learned and continue to learn and be able to help so many people around the world. So I know we're unfortunately out of time. The time just flew by so
it
quick.
does. It always does.
Always love talking with you, Jen. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast. And where can people get in touch with you by your book?
Yeah.
You've got an incredible book that's been released. So breast cancer, if that's your concern, runs in the family, or you're diagnosed or want to prevent it, this is a book I highly encourage everybody to go buy. I know it's on Amazon, Barnes and Noble. What is that the best place for people to go and get it?
Yep. Just right on Amazon, The Smart Woman's Guide to Breast Cancer. And then I have many programs where I'm working with people for both as a group and one-on-one. I have an online course for someone who is starting off and wants to really learn how to take control of their health. So my website is Real Health MD. So just go to realhealthmd.com. I also have a podcast. It's called Keeping Abreast with Dr. Jen. We release a new episode every Monday, and you can get that wherever you get your podcasts. And you can follow me on any of the social media outlets. I'm at Dr. Jen Simmons, and my Jen has two N's.
Dr. Jen Simmons with two N's. Thank you again. Thanks for coming on. Love this
My pleasure.
conversation. And we covered a lot, and I think there's still 100 other things we could talk about, so maybe we'll have to do it again in the future. But appreciate you so much. Thanks.
Happy to do it. Happy to come on again. Great to see you, Nathan.
Thank you for listening to the Nathan Crane Podcast. Please make sure to subscribe and share this on social media. Then head over to nathancrane.com for your free ebook.
So when we're talking about, what are these underlying causes and conditions of these chronic diseases, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, they all have very similar, if not identical, causes. And that's the thing, is when we get to the root cause of these diseases, we can not only prevent these diseases from ever happening, but empower our bodies to heal from them.
In every one of our cells, we have tens and hundreds of thousands of chemical reactions that are happening every second that are cycling back and forth. And it's like sort of a yin and yang.
And, for me, the soul's purpose is evolution. It doesn't care about comfort. It cares about evolution. And so I think so long as we are following our soul, then we will evolve. And I think what sometimes blocks us from living our purpose, from manifesting that next level of our expression, is we have not evolved.
There is also a time for letting go all the expectations and relax and just breathe and be grateful for what you have achieved.